Today is Tuesday, April 14th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. U.S. President Donald Trump says he's planning to reopen the country as France extends its lockdown.
President Macron acknowledged that the epidemic is not under control yet here in France.
Plus the dangers food workers face in the pandemic.
First, our members fear that they can't feed their families because a lot of them are not getting paid.
And a free press matters. Those stories and more are next. U.S. President Donald Trump says he'll issue a plan in the coming days for how and when to reopen the economy, something the nation's governors have begun contemplating themselves. The AP's Sagar Magadi starts us off.
For weeks, the president cited the Constitution while saying he cannot force states to shut down. But when it comes to reopening,
when somebody's the president of the United States, the authority is total.
And says governors know that. But ones from both parties are pushing back, saying the Constitution gives them primary responsibility for ensuring public safety in their states, and it's their call on when it's safe to reopen. The president's own guidelines have little force, while governors and local leaders have the power of law behind theirs. The president did not say why he thinks he has that power, saying only, "We're going to write up papers on this." Sagar Magani, Washington.
At Monday's White House press briefing, coronavirus response coordinator Dr. Deborah Birx says while the rate of deaths remains on the upswing, the rate of infections is leveling off thanks to mitigation efforts.
Not only are the curves flattening in some of those major metropolitan areas, but they're starting to decrease. And this is what we're very excited about. These are cases. We also know that mortality will lag.
According to a Johns Hopkins University tally, there are over 1.9 million confirmed cases of COVID-19 worldwide, resulting in about 120,000 deaths. The United States has more than any other nation, with over 580,000 cases and over 23,000 deaths. French President Emmanuel Macron on Monday announced that he was extending that country's lockdown to curb the coronavirus outbreak until May 11th, adding that progress has been made, but the battle has not yet been won. For more on Macron's decision, I spoke to journalist Nicolas Pinault in Paris via WhatsApp.
President Macron said that school and daycares will progressively reopen from May 11th, but restaurants, hotels, cafe, and cinema will have to remain shut longer. And for universities, colleges, they're going to remain closed until the summer, so the government's going to have to figure it out for the exams. How's it going to work? And I think also something that's important for older and what he mentioned as vulnerable people, they will have to continue to stay at home even after May 11th. But the French government will provide more specifics within 2 weeks.
Now, this is coming at a time, especially as other countries around the world are talking about reopening. That's a big topic of discussion here in the United States. Neighboring Spain has relaxed some of its restrictions. So what is the rationale that the president is using to extend this to May 11th?
Well, because basically, President Macron acknowledged that the epidemic is not under control yet here in France. We still don't have enough masks. And we're still not really fully prepared if there is a second wave coming. So he said, you know, the country was not sufficiently ready for the crisis. And right now, you know, they have made progress, but still it's insufficient. Though that's why, according to him, it's very important to remain on lockdown. We have to remain that as of Monday, France has lost about 15,000 lives, which is the fourth highest death toll in the world. So according to him, there's no rush to go back to normal because he really wants to save life. That's the official message that he delivered yesterday.
That's the official message. What has been the response from the French people?
Well, in his address, President Macron also mentioned that he learned from his mistakes. So that's something that has been really positive for the oppositions and even, you know, in his own political camp. But for the measures itself, being be able to reopen schools as of Monday, as of May 11th, some are really cautious, especially the doctors, because they're basically explaining that you're going to have kids, you know, going together. And if you don't have masks for everyone, if you still have people talking very close to each other, then going back home, that might be a danger, according to some health specialists. So people, they are kind of happy that right now there is a clear timetable, but, you know, it's still a learning experience for every government. And in France, people, they're still not sure that May 11th is going to be the good day to reopen everything.
That was Nicolas Pinault speaking to me from Paris. Some of Australia's tough coronavirus restrictions will be reviewed within weeks as the curve of new infections continues to flatten. Phil Mercer has that story.
Officials say Australia is in a good position in the fight against COVID-19 because of strict social distancing rules, mass testing, and closed borders. But they're warning against complacency and point to a second wave of infections in Japan and Singapore. Dozens of fines were issued by police for Australians breaching orders not to travel over Easter. There have been complaints about overzealous policing, though, and some penalties have been retracted for people mountain biking, putting holiday photographs on social media, and a teenager taking driving lessons. New South Wales, the most populous state, has seen a major drop in new coronavirus infections over the Easter vacation. More than 150,000 tests have been undertaken in New South Wales, about half of the national total. State Premier Gladys Berejiklian discusses testing efforts.
This week, our health officials will be ramping up testing, and I want to thank them because in New South Wales, we've almost conducted double the number of tests compared to the next state. So we know that our testing, the high regime of testing, but also of contact tracing. So once someone's tested positive, our ability to actually contact trace them and those that have been in contact with them is allowing us to control the spread, reduce the spread. And I want to thank everybody involved for that.
Slowing the spread of COVID-19 has led to hopes that some other lockdown restrictions might soon be lifted. Health officials say it's too early to relax some of the social distancing measures, which have included the closure of bars, shops and cafes. The situation will be reviewed, though, within a few weeks. The government says it's working on a plan to gradually reopen businesses and schools. But any large-scale relaxation of the restrictions might not occur until September, after the Australian winter and the traditional flu season. The impact of the coronavirus on Australia's economy is already severe. The finance department in Canberra estimates the jobless rate will double by June to 10%, the highest it's been in nearly three decades. Huge stimulus and job-saving packages worth 10% of GDP have been announced, as much of the Australian economy, once known as the Wonder Down Under, grinds to a halt. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Nearly 3 months after the 2019 coronavirus in the United States was first reported, New York has become the global epicenter of the pandemic. With physical distancing and near-universal sheltering in place, almost all brick-and-mortar businesses have been shuttered, sending the economy into a tailspin. Among those hardest hit are food industry workers in restaurants, sports venues, catering halls, airports, and schools, 95% of whom are now unemployed. To find out more about their plight, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke to Jose Malvinado, the Secretary Treasurer of Unite Here 100, a union that represents 18,000 food service workers in New York and nearby New Jersey. He said their situation is beyond dire.
First, our members hear that they can't feed their families because a lot of them are not getting paid. Unemployment's hard to reach. We appreciate what the government has done so far, but they can't get through unemployment. There's millions of people applying. I understand that. And Governor Cuomo has done some great things by adding 300 more people and 50 more servers and a new website. But until today, we're still getting phone calls that they can't get through. I know I have experience here at home. My son works for Empire Casino, and he's been trying to collect unemployment for the whole month. No luck with him, as well as the rest of my members. But according to the governor, now they're supposed to call you back in 72 hours. We'll see how that works. Do you think that people will actually start being hungry or homeless because of this? Yes, a lot of our members have called us because they have nothing to eat. They can't collect. And we have helped them by connecting to different services to either get a food delivered or connect them to government agencies that are giving emergency help with food. And it's an issue because when you're not getting paid week one, week two, and you can't pay your rent, and now you can't buy a grocery, and you live paycheck to paycheck. And a lot of our members, regretfully, have two jobs because they can't make it with one job. I had a person that called me crying. This is a man that two jobs, that is very proud, and he sent me a text saying, like, I'm a very proud man, but I'm sorry, but I have to ask. You know, there's no food in my fridge. Jose, you know, can you help? So these are the type of stories that we're hearing.
Restaurant workers in New York often live on the edge anyway, financially. So this really hits them even harder than a lot of places would. And also, you know, New York is so identified with restaurants. I mean, that's so much of what New Yorkers love to do, and it's such a hugely strong industry. It sounds like it's just been gutted.
It's worse than gutted. It's just wiped out if this continues. There's no light at the end of the tunnel, because what happens when we come out of our cocoons, start working, is just going to spread again. We don't have a cure for it. So I think the industry is going to hurt even more. I mean, the multi-billion dollar corporations, of course, they're going to be able to open up because they have enough money. But a lot of people have small restaurants. Can they survive this? And a lot of restaurants are going to shut their doors, and a lot of people are going to be unemployed. For example, airport workers that do catering, no health insurance, industry that's heavily hit, very poorly paid. And who's the first one to get bailed out? Airlines. So we hope that some of that money can retain workers. And I think there's something introduced in that bill that will protect workers for a little while. I think it's for 6 months. But after that, where do you go? It's a horrible situation. And of course, a lot of our members are getting sick. We have over 4 or 5 deaths so far. It's not even the member itself sometimes, it's sometimes their loved ones. And again, they call crime because they restrict people to 4 or 5 in a funeral home because of Kobe. There's never a right time to die, but this is a horrible time to die because you can't even get a decent burial. You can't even see your loved ones. This unknown virus is just creating havoc. You know, our jobs, our lives, our loved ones, taking everything.
That was Jose Maldonado, Secretary Treasurer of Unite Here 100 Union, which represents 18,000 food service workers in New York and New Jersey. He spoke with VOA's Adam Phillips. And coming up later,
we are federal employees, but Voice of America is unique in the sense that we are legally separated from interference by any government official. It's one of the things that gives us our power.
You're listening to VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
An international team of astronomers recently reported their discovery of a supernova they call the brightest, most energetic, and probably most massive to be identified so far. Called SN 2016-APS, the astronomers say its explosive energy was 10 times that of a normal-sized supernova, and that about 50% of this energy was radiated as visible light, making it outshine typical supernovae explosions by 500 times. Supernovae usually have masses that are between 8 and 15 solar masses, but the astronomers calculated the mass of this supernova to be between 50 to 100 times that of our sun. Discovery of the supernova's outstanding features was the result of 4 years of follow-up studies after the supernova was first detected in February 2016. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his chief rival, former military chief Benny Gantz, are meeting in a final effort to agree on an emergency government between the two of them that would tackle the coronavirus threat and prevent yet another costly and divisive election amid the crisis. Now, to get the latest, I spoke to Linda Gradstein in Israel.
We are finally, apparently, maybe at the final end of these. There was the mandate, the president of Israel had given Benny Gantz a mandate of 21 days to form a government. And usually what happens when that time runs out, which was actually last night, there's almost an automatic extension. And this time the president said, no extension, enough. He gave them in the end a 2-day extension, meaning that they have until tomorrow night at midnight to form a government. And if that doesn't happen, then it basically gets sent back to the parliament or the Knesset, and they can choose whoever they want. The latest is that it seems that they are very close to an agreement, especially given everything that's happening with the coronavirus. There is a sense that the public just wants this to be finished. Israel has now had no government for more than a year. And I think that both Netanyahu and Gantz just want this to be finished. And my guess is that it will be finished probably pretty close to midnight tomorrow.
Now, this is exactly what caused the last election, right? Because Gantz and Netanyahu couldn't come together. So you mentioned that the public and perhaps both of those individuals want this done because of the coronavirus. How is Israel responding?
Israel has been very quick to put a lockdown in place. People have been sheltering at home now for close to a month. Schools have been closed. In fact, they're now starting to talk about very, very gradually opening things up. And Israel has had about 110 deaths so far, and I think something like 11,000 cases total. So even though there's no government, the health ministry has been running it. And one of the interesting things is that Prime Minister Netanyahu has been giving almost nightly kind of briefings to the public. And it's actually helped his stock in politics quite a lot. One of the interesting things is that a poll last night showed that if an election was held today, Netanyahu would get 40 seats out of the 120 seat Knesset, which is significantly more than he got in the previous several elections. That said, it's only one poll. I think, though, there is a sense that the government is handling the coronavirus crisis well. And in fact, in certain ultra-Orthodox neighborhoods, there's a complete lockdown with army troops going door to door, giving out food and helping people. And in fact, there was just a new lockdown posted for the next 2 days because of the holiday of Passover, which is followed by this Moroccan holiday called Mimouna. And so they don't want families and big gatherings. So they've been really quite strict about enforcing these rules. They give out fines to businesses that open, and they give out fines to anybody who's more than 100 meters from their house.
That was reporter Linda Gradstein in Israel. South Korea's military says a barrage of North Korean missiles fired from both the ground and fighter jets has splashed down on the waters off of the country's east coast. This is a major show of force and comes on the eve of a key state anniversary in North Korea and parliamentary elections in South Korea. The launch is on Tuesday, with the most high profile among a series of weapon tests that North Korea has conducted recently amid stalled nuclear talks and outside worries about a possible coronavirus outbreak in the country. Some experts say North Korea likely used the latest weapon launches to bolster its striking capability against South Korea, which has been introducing U.S.-made stealth F-35 jets and other sophisticated conventional weapon systems in recent years. Others say the latest weapons tests were also aimed at shoring up internal unity in the face of U.S.-led sanctions and the coronavirus pandemic. At his daily coronavirus briefing on Monday, U.S. President Donald Trump complained he has been treated very unfairly by the media.
I've educated a lot of people as to the press, and I would love to be able to say that we have a very honest press. Honestly, John, there'd be nothing I would be more proud of if the press would work. And I don't mind being criticized, but not when they're wrong.
The comments were in response to a scathing New York Times article on his administration's response to the pandemic. Last week, an official White House publication accused Voice of America of using taxpayer money to speak for authoritarian regimes. The publication criticized the congressionally funded Voice of America's coverage of the pandemic and China. VOA Asia's Ira Melman spoke to Voice of America director Amanda Bennett about the criticism.
Well, I mean, the first thing when you see a criticism is to try and decide whether or not or check to see whether or not the criticism is valid. So we took a look at the things that were being referred to. And frankly, we were a little puzzled because One of the items that was referred to was an Associated Press story. And the Associated Press, as you know, is a professional news organization that people subscribe to and is used by us as well as many, many news organizations around the world. It was just a simple item about the reopening of Wuhan. And the second one was a set of facts that were drawn from the Johns Hopkins database, which is also the standard thing that everyone is using. So they were both pretty standard, very non-controversial items. So we were a little bit surprised.
Where do you think this came from? Why do you think this came from?
I have absolutely no idea. If people have queries or questions or complaints about our content, we are extremely responsive. So if people reach out to us, we're happy to engage. And if we've made some error, we're happy to correct it. We're by law required to represent all American people and not just a segment of American people, and to provide objective, truthful news and information according to the highest standards of professional journalism. And so we do our extreme, very best to make sure that on all issues, we're looking at it as neutral as possible and giving all the aspects of it a chance to be seen and heard. And that sometimes includes things that people want to hear, and sometimes includes things that people don't want to hear. But that's how we get our credibility, is that we try very, very hard to show all sides of an issue.
How do you deal with situations like this? Obviously, you, both of us, work for the U.S. federal government.
Well, we are federal employees, but Voice of America is unique in the sense that we are legally separated from interference by any government official. It's one of the things that gives us our power. It's actually the independence is really the existential question for Voice of America, because even though we are 100% government funded, we are not government controlled. And that's what the difference is between us and other government controlled state media. And it's also one of the reasons we have credibility, is because people know that we are not expressing a single point of view. We're expressing a multiplicity of points of views.
What I'm thinking of is what we are doing, and I know what the rest of VOA is doing, trying to inform our audience, which are people around the world, what is happening with the coronavirus pandemic. Doesn't that stand up against what we have been charged with doing?
You know, I think I'd like to look at it in a bigger context, which is that, yes, of course, that's what we're doing. And as a matter of fact, you can tell by the way our audiences are growing in all the 47 languages in which we broadcast. Our audiences are huge, and people from all over the world are really coming to us, because you can see that in a crisis like this, they really want to know what's what. And they're coming. People are coming to us from countries, for example, where the country's press is required to produce only the official version of what's going on. And everybody sees that in those countries, that's not the whole version. So people are coming to us looking to see what experts from all around the spectrum are telling them. And that's one of our great strengths, is we broadcast all around the world, and we're trusted to show all sides of an issue.
It was very interesting that the VOA has been charged with taking the China side of the stories, but at the same time, China is kicking journalists out of China.
Yes, in common with the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal, the Washington Post, and Time magazine, we've been effectively barred from most of our news gathering operation in China. And we'd very much like to report from China. So that, I think, shows that there is some maybe fear of what we're reporting to the rest of the world, and frankly, to the people of China themselves.
Is this the first such pressure you have faced since you've been in the job?
You know, this job is full of pressures from all kinds of sides. I mean, remember that we are not broadcasting into the United States, and English is one of the languages we broadcast in, but only to countries outside of the United States. So when you talk about this kind of pressure, we receive pressure from all kinds of countries. It comes from Iran, pressure comes from China, pressure comes from Russia. There's nothing new about pressure in this job. When you tell the entire truth or try to tell the entire truth from all sides, you're going to get pressure from around the world.
That was VOA Director Amanda Bennett speaking to VOA Asia's Ira Melman. And that'll do it for us today. You've been listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of our entire production team, thank you very much for listening. Be sure to visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day. Until next time, I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Have a great day.
The following program.